Today's episode of the Locked On Sabres podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get 20% off your next order.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano, your Tuesday Eastern Conference edition. But, Mike, there's really no – is there an Eastern Conference left? I don't even know if we can call it that anymore. We're going to have to just call it the East edition of the podcast.
Yeah, it's strange, huh? We're no longer a two-conference team. We've got three divisions – or four divisions, and Division 1, 2, 3, and then a Canadian division, I guess, is the way that it's going to be going about. And I suppose the Canadian division is considered – to be part of the East. I don't know. It is rather confusing, and it's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out. Like, the schedule is going to be interesting to see how all of these teams play against each other. Or is it going to be, you know, like we talked about last week, three games in four nights, three games in five nights, a bunch of back-to-backs. I don't know. It's going to be insane, but it does seem like we are getting ever so close to getting hockey back, and that is a good thing.
We're going to talk about the divisional realignment. In fact, we're going to power rank the divisions that have East teams in them. Real quick, though, do the Leafs raise divisional banners? Like, I don't think Montreal does it. I think most other teams do, because I was talking about this with a buddy the other day. Like, well, we got to figure out what the names are of these divisions, not probably for the Sabres' sake, because, I mean, it would be – I mean, what, pigs will fly before they win that division this season. But if they did win it, like, what are they going to put up in the rafters? And I know not everybody does that, but, like, do they do that in Toronto, divisional banners?
Yes, they do, if I can remember correctly. Yes, they definitely do. Yeah, I've seen them up there. I think, well, for Canada, it's going to be Canadian division, right?
Yeah.
Or whoever wins it. So that one will be interesting. And that'll be really cool, because that'll be the only time ever, I'm thinking, probably, that banner will be made, and that banner will fly in one building for forever. Right. And it's probably only going to happen once in a lifetime. So whoever ends up winning the Canadian division this year will be able to do something and have something up in the rafters that no other team across the world is going to be able to say that they have.
Right. The other divisions, too, the one idea I had for the names was kind of a throwback to the old, like, the Patrick division and the Wales division, but, like, a more updated version of that. So maybe you just go back to the last 25, 30 years. Yeah, right. Gretzky, Lemieux. Yeah, you'd probably – maybe you'd have to have an argument on who the third guy is. Messier is a good one for that. Maybe Yager. Yager. Ooh, Yager would be good. I want Yager. Never mind.
Put conversation over.
I want a banner in the Sabres arena forever that says Jaromír Jágr division winners. Like, please give me that. That would be incredible.
We already know that'll never happen anyways, but
no, right. Yeah.
You can wait. You can hope.
We'll power rank those divisions later on, and you'll see how low I think I have the Sabres, and I'm sure you'll have them just as low too. It's not all about them. I mean, it's of course partly about them, but that division that the Sabres are in, with the Bruins and the Islanders and the Rangers and the Penguins and the Capitals and the Flyers. Like, if this was a FIFA World Cup, they refer to the toughest group as the group of death. I feel like that might be the group of death, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's get to a couple of news items though, here on the podcast before we move on. And one that I want to get your thoughts on, because you are paying more attention to this situation, not just because of the World Juniors coming up, but because this involves the Toronto Maple Leafs. Nick Robertson will not play for the U.S. And Mike, if I have this right, it's mostly because they don't want to guarantee him a roster spot if he shows up a week into camp. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. They wanted to be there for camp, and Bob McKenzie, you know, the goat of all goats when it comes to hockey reporting, came out last week and kind of set the tone and said, hey, just so you know, an interesting situation may be developing now that we're getting some word that the NHL might be starting up, or camps will be starting up as early as January 3rd. And he put out a little Twitter thread, I guess, and I'll read it out to you really quickly. It says, quote, ideally, Toronto would like to have Robertson in the World Junior Championships, but the priority for the team and presumably the player himself is to try to make the Leafs 2021 roster. If the projected NHL return to play date of January 13th is reality, camps would open up late December, early January, and the World Junior Gold Medal game is January 5th. Complicating matters is the NHL's health and safety protocols for a 7-day quarantine for players who arrive in the NHL city on a commercial flight. So even though Robertson would be coming in from the Edmonton bubble, taking a flight from Edmonton to Toronto would trigger a 7-day quarantine and he would miss camp. So they didn't want him to miss the entire training camp because I'm assuming they think that he has a good chance to make the team. But what's interesting is that Chicago are basically doing the same thing with Kirby Dach, except they're letting him go, letting him play. So I don't know why the Maple Leafs, considering to me, Robertson doesn't actually have a spot on this roster. Like, it's not guaranteed. Can he fight and scrap for one? Maybe. And even if he does, it's going to be for a bottom six role. I do not agree with holding him out of the World Championships. I did an episode on Friday giving my reasons why he should go to the World Junior Championships on Locked On Leafs, if you want to hear my full thoughts on that. And I think this is a mistake by Kyle Dubas and the Leafs to not let him go. Like, playing a best-on-best tournament has to be a lot better for A, his experience going forward, and B, getting him into game shape. Like, how is he going to get into game shape just practicing? He's not. Right. At least he's playing a best-on-best tournament for his country at the World Juniors, gaining that valuable experience. That'll whip him up into shape real quick, and you'll get a sense of, you know, how he battles in real game scenarios. You know how he plays against men, if that's what you're trying to see in person, because you watched him play in the playoffs last year. Now I just want to make sure that, you know, his mind took that next leap while he's on the ice this year, and you could find that out in game scenarios in the World Junior Championships. So I don't think it was necessary to keep him out of the championships. They could have got all the information that they needed just watching the tape and watching him play and giving him a chance to win a silver medal with the Americans.
Yeah, I had to slip that in. Yeah. I was in line with you all the way, and then you slipped that in and you just ruined it all just like that. No.
Well, I suppose they could win bronze, I guess.
No, but like I agree with you on this, that there's I find a disconnect in the logic where, well, we're not sending him, and you would think the reasoning is, well, we want to get a closer look at him if he really is going to be on this team on opening night. But your logic then is that you're going to find that out more by practices than you are than in that tournament. And I don't think that that has to be right. And if the tiebreaker goes to, well, this is probably hugely important to the player that he would get to play in the World Juniors, given that he'll never have the chance again, then I think you got to let him go. And I think you've got to let him play. And I know not everybody is letting their guys play, but, you know, Robertson, like, he does not have that draft status, at least as being a second round pick. I know he did scored one goal, right, in the playoffs last year. I remember him scoring at least once. Yeah. I've got him at one goal in four games. So he's gotten a taste of the NHL, but it's not like, even you mentioned Kirby Dach. Dach's played 63 games for Chicago, and they're promising him a spot. So, like, to me, that makes more sense. And then if it's Jack Hughes or it's Kaapo Kakko or it's Alexis Lafreniere, like, you know those guys are going to be on the team. And now here's Nick Robertson, and I don't know if there is a good chance, but if there's a chance he does not make the team opening night, I mean, he could not make the team opening night and not get to play in the World Juniors, and, like, Nick Robertson kind of gets screwed out of everything. So I don't know. I would have let him play. I know the Sabres are letting Dylan Cousins. I know he has more draft status as a 7th overall pick, and, you know, he might just get a spot in the opening night lineup just because of where he was drafted, and they want to just see. But, like that's the same thing. Like, he's going to play on Team Canada's top line probably, and I feel like the Sabres and everybody watching is going to find out more about his NHL readiness than if he's just playing in practice.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this tournament will ready these players a lot more than training camp will. Case in point, like, last year, the Toronto Maple Leafs in the whole return to play, you know, when they went, they did their practicing before going out to the Edmonton bubble. Ilya Mikheyev was the MVP of the practice return to play thing. And it was funny because he was coming off of an injury and hadn't played since not since March, but actually since December with it. And he was out with a wrist injury, but he returned and he was stellar. He was amazing. Looked fantastic in the scrimmage games and then laid an absolute egg once it came to the real deal in the playoffs. So, you know, these practices aren't the be all and end all is what I'm saying. And I think it's very short-sighted to try and get a look at him in practice, because I believe that it would have been much more beneficial for him and his development if he would have been able to go and compete at the World Junior Championships in a very large role, take upon a leadership role with the Americans, and play a best-on-best tournament against the best in his age group. It's really just some short-sightedness, in my opinion, for the Maple Leafs. The only other thing that I will say, and I think is a big reason for this, is the fact that last year, Nick Robertson was among the first people to get cut from Maple Leafs camp, and he didn't really get to go through a full training camp. He was sent back to the OHL, and Kyle Dubas came out and said that that he regretted that decision. So I wonder if that played a factor into it, where he's now going into his second year, and knowing that he didn't get a full NHL training camp last year and didn't get a fair look, that Kyle Dubas wants to get that look in a real NHL training camp this year, and because of the World Junior Championships, it would be getting in the way of that, because upon return, he wouldn't be able to play until January 13th, which we all know would be the projected start date. He's not going to be able to. So I feel like that is the thing that's really holding this back, is the fact that he didn't get in a proper training camp last year, and they didn't want to have to do that for a second year in a row, especially considering that they're expecting him to take a pretty sizable leap going into this season.
Yes, and we'll talk about that in a little bit when we talk about the divisions. A couple other news things. Actually, the first one is more a lack there of news. There are a lot of restricted free agents that are still unsigned. Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus, Matthew Barzal with the Islanders, Anthony Cirelli in Tampa Bay, Dylan Strome. Those are probably the biggest four names, Strome in Chicago. Let me point to Cirelli first for you for a second. And I actually want to relate this to something you mentioned to me before we started that I had forgotten about, that I read a couple days ago, that we might get compliance buyouts, or maybe NHL teams are waiting to see if we get compliance buyouts as an added measure for the restart of the season, especially with there being a flat cap. It did not get raised above that $81.5 million. And a team like Tampa, I'll use as the example here, who has Anthony Cirelli unsigned as a restricted free agent, 23 years old. He's been a great player for 2-3 years. There'd be no on-ice reason to not want to re-sign him. But they are already $2 million over the salary cap, and they have already started the process of buying out Tyler Johnson. But for now, Johnson still does remain on their cap. And even if you buy him out at $5 million, you still have only got $2.5 million left over for Anthony Cirelli. Probably not enough, I would think. So I wonder if you think compliance buyouts are realistic. And then even for that specific example, I don't even know with them if Tampa is going to carve out enough spot or enough cap here to sign Cirelli without trading away, you know, an Alex Killorn or an Andre Palat. Like, I feel like they might have to do that in addition to a buyout.
Yeah, it does seem like Tampa's going to have to kind of pull a Chicago, where they're going to have to get rid of some of their troops after winning a Stanley Cup, because, you know, it cost a lot of money to win games, and that's what they did. They won a lot of games, and they're rewarded for it. They're going to be able to put a banner up in their rooms, and they got a Stanley Cup trophy. So I don't feel bad for the Tampa Bay Lightning that they got themselves in a little bit of a pickle here. Are they going to get bailed out by a compliance buyout? I'm not 100% sure that is going to be the case. You think about all these owners. Sure, there are some, like the Maple Leafs, who are just going to be like, sure, go ahead, stroke as many checks as you need. Let's just get a winning product out on the ice. And there are a bunch of other owners that way. But there's also a lot of owners that aren't really willing to spend money. And I don't think there's a lot that are going to be on board of these compliance buyouts to just stroke checks and away you go, spend more money into the pot after you know, you're already operating at a loss for this season. So we'll see if that does happen. But there are 10 teams currently that are above the salary cap. And it almost does seem like the best way for them to kind of get themselves out of the tricky situation that they're in is to give everybody one compliance buyout. You know, Matt Barzell is another player that needs to be signed here by the Islanders, and they are they good to go? No, the Islanders only have $3.9 million. Yeah. Like, that's not going to get him signed.
No, right? Definitely not.
So, you know, there's 10 teams that are above it due to the flat cap, and obviously just not budgeting for a flat cap over the past couple of seasons. I don't think anybody was or anybody should have even done that. But because we do have this flat cap, there may need to be a change of course, and maybe a compliance buyout is a way to help some of these teams get under the cap, because I just don't really see a way. Like, even Tampa, they only have 19 players on their roster and they're still over the cap.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing. Like, if you're looking for like places to dump salary, like, this is something that the Coyotes have done for teams a lot in the past, where they will take on your big contract and hope for something in return. I think Florida's done this before too. Like, this happens sometimes with retired players. Like, you'll see Datsyuk and Pronger on the Coyotes cap friendly page because they were sent over there for cap reasons. And the problem is, you don't also have a lot of teams at the bottom that are going to be able to afford to do that. Because when you've got 10 teams at the top that might be looking to shed salary, well, you mentioned you've got 10 teams over the cap. I've only got 7 teams that have more than $5 million in space. So you're going to have a place to put it. The Devils have $17 million. You can't all put it on New Jersey or LA, the two teams with the most cap space. So, yeah, I think compliance buyouts might almost have to happen, because I just don't know where the cap space goes. You know,
yeah,
and that's what comes with a fixed system like the NHL has cap wise,
for sure. And I just think that it's the only way to get all these teams back underneath the cap. Like, you're just, like you said, there's not enough teams that are going to be willing to take on some of these contracts that are going to be necessary moves for these teams to get themselves under the cap. Yeah. But again, it comes down to the Board of Governors meetings and them signing off for approval. And just not 100% sure that the owners are going to be looking to spend their money that way.
Yep. Another team that is over the cap, by the way, about $1 million over the cap, that will be our final part of the news items here, is the Vegas Golden Knights. And there was a report about a week ago, actually, I think it was later in the day that we had recorded last week, that TSN reported that Max Pacioretty was being shopped by the Golden Knights. Then Jesse Granger of The Athletic reported, I think on Wednesday, the day after, that Jonathan Marchessault and Marc-Andre Fleury's names had come out also. Then you've got Vegas Golden Knights owner Bill Foley coming out and saying they are not shopping Pacioretty. That, by the way, is the second time this offseason that Foley has done that, where it's been out in the media that, hey, someone's getting shopped. First time around, it was Marc-Andre Fleury. And then Foley comes out and says, well, no, we're actually not doing that. Well, they're going to have to trade somebody, you would think. This is just kind of the cycle of what Vegas does, isn't it? They bring in a high price guy, like this happened with Paul Stastny. Then they find another high price guy that they like more. And then they've got to find a way to shed the big contract they had just locked in a couple of years ago. Right now, I would think Pacioretty for Vegas would be more appealing. Like, let's work actually just from like an Eastern Conference point of view. If you're a team in the East, let's say you're Toronto, or maybe a team with a little more, like, that's got some space. If you're a team in the East, would you rather be looking to acquire Max Pacioretty or Jonathan Marchessault? Because Pacioretty's still a great player, but I think they might have, they're either going to have a harder time finding a team, or they're not going to get as much as they want for a 32-year-old that's got 3 years left at $7 million.
Yeah, it's quite the ticket there. I don't know who I'd rather, to be quite honest with you.
I think I'd pick Marchessault just because of the age and the contract. I think they're very similar in terms of how good a player they are.
Yeah, but Marchessault's got one extra year at $5 million. Do you want to take on that extra term? Sure. Like, in terms of overall dollars, it's pretty well the same. Marchessault's $20 million over the next 4, yet Pacioretty's 21. Yep. The next 3, and I think Pacioretty is certainly the better player of the two. But again, at 32 years old, what are you going to get out of Pacioretty going forward? He did play well this past season, though. So, you know, I think he still has some legs underneath him. And he doesn't play a speed game anyways. He's a pretty methodical player, a power player. But there are going to be some teams out there that will be interested if Max Pacioretty and or Jonathan Marchessault are out on the block. You think of some of the teams who even have the cap space to do it. Like you said, there's not a lot of teams that can afford a $7 million or $5 million contract. Like,
and how many are contenders, really?
Yeah, like maybe you could say like the Panthers could be interested. Columbus could be interested. Potentially,
I could just see Columbus for some reason. I could just see the Blue Jackets being in something like that.
Well, it makes sense. Like, they do need some scoring. You get a guy like Max Pacioretty, and they kind of do play a structured, tough style game, and you know that's kind of what Pacioretty can play. So that would make a little bit of sense. You know, lining him up with Sean Tortorella, which they do, I believe, have a connection. With the American national team, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
So, you know, there is a slight connection there. But yeah, there's only a handful of teams that are even going to be able to pull off these deals for any of these guys who are looking to trade anybody. But in terms of Vegas, when it comes to Pacioretty and Marchessault, you're not going to have a lot of suitors, and you're certainly not going to get anywhere near the return that you would be able to get on a regular basis.
Yeah, it is definitely not the time to be wanting to cash in on a big money score, regardless of who it is. So we'll see if they pull it off.
Well, they may even have to add. You know what I mean? Like, they may have a pick or a prospect just to take on that money, take on that salary. Like, this may have to be like a cap dump.
And that's insane because he scored 30 goals last year.
I know. I know. It's you know, these teams are going to be under the gun over the next month trying to get themselves under the cap. And if, you know, especially Vegas, because Vegas held every team under the gun during the expansion. This is their chance to exact their revenge on this team. I don't think that they're going to allow them off the hook that easily. And it's going to cost them a pick or a prospect and one that they hold in a very high regard in order to get under the cap to be able to play this season. It's going to cost them.
We'll be back here on the Locked On Sabres podcast in 1 second. First, you know, day by day, there are several walls that you've got to get through. And for me, that's, you know, getting ready for a show or getting up and having enough energy to do a workout, or you got something around to do housewise. Built Go is really what you want. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. Easy to take in 1.5 ounce packages, put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever. Your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and better results. I am somebody that drinks no sugar energy drinks all the time. I was drinking two a day. Don't Google what those things do to you. those sugarless energy drinks. I'm on to Built Go now. Three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into my system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work. Visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano, myself from Locked On Sabres, Mike from Locked On Leafs. We're going to get into a little divisional realignment conversation here. In fact, we're going to power rank some of these divisions, the ones most notably that have teams that we've been covering for the last year, plus teams in the Eastern Conference. So Division 1, Division 2, and the Canadian Division, from the way Pierre LeBrun was describing them earlier. We'll have to slap some names on them at some point. Would like to have that discussion maybe in the future. But before we do that, in fact, we could make this a part of, if we power rank the Canadian division here. Mike, I think Toronto, maybe of any team in terms of on-ice impact, maybe made out the best here.
because they go from having to compete with the Bruins and the Lightning on a year-in, year-out basis to – and maybe there you could pick out a team here that you can make a case for. I think I – there's nobody I can make a great case for winning that Canadian division than the Maple Leafs.
There's a couple of teams that I think will definitely compete in this division. And yes, they got away from the Bruins. They got away from Tampa, but they don't really have any cupcake teams to beat up on to get themselves points, right? Like you can't Ottawa. Go out there. Ottawa. Yes. They're a much improved team, but Detroit's no longer there to beat up on. Buffalo's not there to beat up on. Florida was a team that I think is on the downswing. They've lost a couple of key players to their lineup, so they don't have those easy points to get. Every win and every point in this Canadian division is going to be earned, and it's going to be a tough, tough battle the entire way. Like, I think the Canucks have a pretty good chance. I think the Flames had made a lot of additions this season. I think they got a chance to compete here in the Canadian division, potentially win it. And there's a lot of love going around for the Jets, right? Like, Connor Hellebuck is a hell of a goaltender. Won the Vezina last year. Yep. If that defense can take a big step this year, they got to figure out the blue line. That's no secret there. And if that can happen, boy, I think the Jets could make some noise in this division too. So, although the Maple Leafs do look like they are at the top of the division, it's going to be a very, very tough road to get there.
Yes. Let's rank the Canadian division teams real quick. I would have Toronto number one. I would then have, I think, the Oilers at number two, the Jets at number three, with the Canucks at number four, Flames at five, and then Montreal at six and Ottawa at seven. That's the order I would have it in. I think you can make a lot of different cases for those teams in the middle. So, for instance, the reported format that we might see is top four in each division end up making it. So in that scenario, I would have the Maple Leafs, the Oilers, the Jets, and I think I had the Canucks at four. Those would be my four playoff teams. One other thing I got to mention, though, is if that's the division or if that's the way you make the playoffs, all those teams in the Canadian division will have the benefit of having one less team than everybody else to compete with.
Yep, that is true. They'll have one less team, which will give them technically better odds to make the playoffs, I guess. Yeah. So four out of the seven are going to make it, which makes sense. You need some Canadian representation in the playoffs. That's where you're going to make your most money if you're looking for television contracts and television views. You're going to get it from these Canadian teams. For myself, obviously, the host of the Locked On Leafs podcast, I got Toronto up at the top, not just because of that, but because I truly do. You look on paper, I think they've got the best collection of players out on the ice. Secondly, actually, I have the Calgary Flames. I think they made some massive additions, and they finally addressed the goaltending position for the first time since Mika Kiprusoff. Now with Jakob Markstrom in net. Yep. They also added a little bit to the blue line. So we'll see. I think the Flames are in good shape there in this division. And then I'd probably go with the Canucks here at third. The Canadian, I don't know if I want to go Oilers or Canadians. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with the Oilers here at fourth, Canadians at fifth, Jets sixth, and then the Senators at the bottom in the seventh hole.
Okay, so we're not too far off on the Canadian division. And again, I think like if you told me the Oilers missed the playoffs out of that top four, like I wouldn't be surprised. I think I had them third, maybe, but like I wouldn't be surprised at all if they missed, because it's basically the McDavid and Draisaitl show, and they're just putting Band-Aids over everything else at this point.
Yeah.
So, well, Edmonton maybe is the most interesting team up and down, like where they land. So we'll see in the Canadian division what happens. The other two divisions that I want to get into is the division that includes, it's basically the Metropolitan division, but it's the Bruins and Sabres in for the Hurricanes and the Blue Jackets. So it's Bruins, Devils, Sabres, Islanders, Rangers, Flyers, Penguins, and Capitals. If I were going to rank them, I would put the Bruins at number one. I think they're the most complete team in the division. I think the Capitals are my second team. I don't think they're going to have a big drop-off. In fact, they might have an upgrade in goal, at least from last year to this year. I know Braden Holtby on the long term had been a great goaltender for them, Vezina caliber seasons, but did not perform very great, was not great last season. I think Ilya Samsonov, in a limited sample size, 30-plus games, played pretty good for them last year, and he's an up-and-coming, one of the best goalie prospects in the world. So I think Washington's going to get the goaltending they need to be second. I got the Flyers at third, and then I have the Rangers at four. I just love their young talent, and I think that with Shesterkin and Nat playing the way he did, if he comes back looking like that, I think the Rangers, just in terms of who their goalie is, might be able to get there. But then they have the upside of all those young players like Lafreniere and Kako. And if those guys break out, that's just another added scorer. So I have the Penguins missing the playoffs narrowly as the five seed. And then the Islanders at six. I just, you know what? Every year, I guess I'm going to come back and be the doubter on the Islanders. I think every year I'm going to be wrong on them for eternity. But I've got them at six. And then I've got the Sabres at seven. I think the Sabres are actually closer to the Penguins and Islanders than they are the Devils, who I think are going to be in the basement of this division. I do think the Sabres are the seventh team, but I think they're closer to those teams right above them than below. I think Hall's going to help a lot, but the only way I think they make the playoffs, the only way, is if Linus Ullmark comes out and has a career season. He was, I think, 16th in save percentage last year. Like, he's got to be a top 10 goalie. And I guess it could happen, but I'm not betting on it. So I've got the Sabres at seven. My Sabres at seven.
Yeah, I think I'll go the same thing. Sabres and Devils seven and eighth. Up at the top of the division, man, I think I'm going with the Rangers. I love, love, love this Rangers team, even more than you, apparently, because I have them sitting there up top at one. Look, they've got MVP candidate Artemi Panarin. They've got Mika Zibanejad, DJ Zibaz. Absolutely cooking up a storm out in New York. You know, Kapokako going into his second year, I expect a big leap for him. Bringing in Alexi Lafreniere, you know, like, there's just Chris Kreider's out there. Defensively, they've got some decent defensemen, Adam Fox, Jacob Trouba, and then they got Igor Shesterkin. You talk about how good Ilya Samsonov is. I mean, I think Shesterkin could be the next Andrei Vasilevsky. He could be like the best goaltender in the league in the next couple of seasons. And I think that this is going to be his first full year in the NHL, and he's going to be an absolute stud. So I believe the Rangers are going to end up at top of this division. I think probably the talk about really good young goaltending. I think the Flyers maybe finish second in this division. I think the Capitals will finish third. I think the Bruins will fall down to fourth. The biggest thing about the Bruins, I think they're taking a little bit of a step back. They've lost some players. Torrey Krug is gone. Zdeno Chara has not yet signed back. And they're going to be missing Brad Marchand for the first little bit of the season. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time for them to adjust and get going. And then there's the Tuukka Rask thing. We don't even know if Tuukka Rask is going to be willing to come and play. We know he left during the return to play in the playoff bubble, and whether or not there's still some bad blood there. I don't know, but I'm just saying there could be, and it could factor in a little bit here. So I think the Bruins, I have them falling back and falling off a little bit, but still in the top four, followed by the Penguins, Islanders, Sabres, and then Devils.
And one other point I want to make on this division, I made this point on Locked On Sabres a couple of days ago, is you have three teams that are going to be bringing in star goalie prospects that could end up taking over their net. And in fact, in Washington and with the Rangers, I think we would both predict that they are going to take over their nets. And Igor Shesterkin with the Rangers, Ilya Samsonov with the Capitals, and then Ilya Sorokin with the Islanders. We'll see how much game time he's able to carve out. But that division, if all three of those guys show up and they're as good as they were projected, then that division just gets even better. You know, like, if all three of those guys are great, then like a team like the Sabres or the Devils at the bottom, if they're even dreaming of getting in the top four, like, end that conversation now, because those three guys have elite potential. And if they all show up and are great, then it's going to be damn difficult to get in. And then the final division that we're going to rank here is not entirely made up of the East. I kind of call this the division of misfit toys, because I don't feel like anybody belongs with each other. Like, you've got Minnesota and Carolina in the same division. Sure, whatever. Like, we'll just put them together. We'll just see what happens. Geographically, it's the best they could do. And we'll see if this ends up even staying this way, because this is not finalized yet. This is, again, all going off a report from Pierre LeBrun. I have the teams first: Detroit, Chicago, Minnesota, Columbus, Florida, Nashville, Carolina, and Tampa. I would have the Lightning at number one, the defending Stanley Cup champs. I would have Carolina at number two. They're one of the best possession teams in the league year after year, and their only thing that continues to haunt them is goaltending. Yes, that still exists, but I think this is an easy division, and I think they're the second best team. I would go Nashville at number three, and I would go Columbus at number four, with the Panthers on the outside of the playoffs at five, Minnesota at six, the Blackhawks at seven, and the Red Wings down in the basement at eight. But I do think this is the easiest division of the four.
It's a toss-up between this division and Division Three. Like, the California teams just suck.
That's true.
You throw in the Coyotes there as well. So it's a toss-up there. But then you say, but you got to play the Avs and the Golden Knights. But over here, you got to play the Lightning, who are very tough.
And the Stars. And don't forget the Stars. I kind of forgot they were in the Stanley Cup final.
Division Two, I think the Lightning, obviously, are the world-class of the league and top of this division. I also think I have the Hurricanes coming in at number two. Number three, I think the Blue Jackets will finish out at three. They got some really solid goaltenders. They still got Merzlikins. They've got Korpisalo there. I think between those two goalies and playing the structured game that they like to play, I believe that they're going to come out and have a pretty good season and finish up at in the third spot there. And then probably the Predators, followed by the Minnesota Wild. And then we've got, who do we have left? Blackhawks, Panthers, and Red Wings. Yeah. So we'll go Blackhawks, Panthers, and the Red Wings coming in dead last. I think everyone will probably have it that way as well.
Brutal. Well, maybe we'll talk about these divisions more when they are actually finalized. Again, that has not happened yet. Come back next Tuesday. Me and Mike will be talking more about the season. We'll start previewing the season, which is under a month away now.
Yeah.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been the Locked On NHL Podcast with Joe DiBiase and Mike DiStefano, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.